fiddle with pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk. Welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or the Catholic Church. Today I've invited Brother Karen Fenn to a Zoom recording for broadcast. Brother Karen, a warm welcome at Heide Weiter Radio Program.
You're a bad day.
Brother Karen Fenn is a Champagne brother and Bible scholar. He's originally from Gisborne and has spent many years in adult education, teaching scripture in New Zealand and abroad. Titipona Mustadi Njoi is currently running a series with Brother Karen about the women in the Bible. Brother Karen, we have looked at Genesis and at Exodus and the book of the Judges and the book of Joshua. Now we're coming to another big tribe, or let's say the tribe of the Moabites. What is the background of Israel and his relationship to Moab?
Well, Moab is to the east of the Dead Sea, and it gets portrayed negatively often in the Bible. Remember back in Genesis, story of Lot's daughters, and with thinking that every man, all the males had been killed, then they have relations with their father. Now, if you didn't like people, you told a nasty story about their origins. So Moab, from my father, the very name of them. And then it moved on from that, from being born of incest, when the people of Israel came out of Egypt through the desert to the promised land, the Moabites wouldn't give any supplies to Israel. And then the Balak, king of Moab, he called the prophet Balaam to curse Israel. That's a famous story when the donkey could see the angel. Right?
I don't know the story with the donkey. The story with the donkey. What do you mean?
Well, Balaam was so keen to get on with the job, he was riding a donkey to come to get to the place, but an angel was there in front with a sword to stop it, and he's beating the donkey. And the donkey talks and tells him, "Lay off! Can't you see what's ahead?" And when Balaam can see, and there's an angel there with a big sword stopping. Right. So that's another one. But Balaam can't curse Israel. This is a famous blessing. "Now I see him coming, but not yet. A scepter shall arise out of Israel." And he has to bless them rather than curse them. So that was another episode. And then there was another interesting story. In the days of Judges, the Moabite king oppressed Israel for 18 years. It's the second judge, Ehud, who slays Eglon, king of Moab. It's a rather nasty story. I think the sword goes up to about the elbow, the left hand, a left sword, right? So it's another of those gruesome stories that you get. So, yes, and so there was a prohibition against admitting Moab, any Moabite, into the people of Judah up to the 10th generation. I wonder if they had to put in P.S. this does not apply to Moabite Esses after the story of Ruth. So, yes.
So they were very much afraid to mix and mingle with the Moabites.
Oh, well, yes. They actually sort of seduced Israel at one stage, and just before entering the land. So again, wasn't good. But you do have the interesting point that later David took his parents to live in Moab for their safety during the days of Saul. So it certainly seems to establish some Moabite ancestry for David.
Ah, so that, and we come to a very famous Moabite. And this famous Moabite is an ancestor of Jesus, isn't it?
Ancestor of David, and she gets into the genealogy of Matthew, right?
So let's continue with the first chapter of the book. And what happens in Moab in the first chapter of this book?
Well, it's interesting that in Moab itself, you only get about five verses of what happens in Moab. There's an awful lot of action because famine in Moab, in Judah, leads to leaving Bethlehem, the house of bread, for Moab. Native soil offers death. Foreign soil offers life. Suddenly Moab gets a bit of credit. But you have this healthy family leaving a sick land. And the patriarch Elimelech leads his family, a full family, his devoted wife, his two children, sons, Mahlon and Chilion, and then Elimelech dies fairly quickly. Naomi is left with her two children, so there's some hope of restoration with the two sons marrying two Moabite wives, Orpah and Ruth.
So both of them were Moabites. They were from the same
tribe. Yes, yes.
They married an Israelite.
Yes, yes.
And Naomi is the mother of the two husbands.
Mahlon and Chilion, yes. And, of course, they die also. So we're left with a desperate situation. There had been 10 years have passed by. No child yet. Death cancelled life with the death of the two sons. And poor Naomi has lost all her identity, no longer a wife, no longer a mother. And what's her future? It's going to be loneliness and misery. She hears then that the Lord has remembered Judah, and now there is food there. So she starts to return with her daughters-in-law from the country of Moab. And so much of that first chapter is on the border between the two countries. Three childless widows gathered at the border. And Naomi tries to send her two younger women back to their mother's house. Orpah turns back. She does the sensible thing. But then Naomi is very grateful to the two daughters-in-law. They've been very good. They've been compassionate, kind. And that kindness and mercy, she calls on God to witness and bless the two of them because God should be showing the same kind of kindness. And it's an invoking of a blessing for their loving kindness. And she hasn't experienced that, because when she gets back, call me Mara, bitterness, replacing the pleasantness. So she blesses them. May the Lord deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with the dead and with me. Three times, go back. Then Ruth does the unexpected. And her choice is startling. Because she sacrifices. Wherever you go, I shall go. Your people shall be my people. Your God shall be my God. I would argue that this would be the most radical commitment in the Hebrew Bible. Brother Abraham is the only one you can compare it with. But Abraham was a man, had a wife, and had possessions. Ruth has nothing. She doesn't know God yet. She only knows her own country and her own gods, perhaps.
So do you think that the Moabites had a different God or a different religion?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes. They certainly are not followers of the Lord.
So Ruth would have learned something during her marriage and her time with her mother-in-law, and so she was inclined to stay in that belief system.
Yes, well, again, it's one of those unknown elements of the story, right? So they come to Bethlehem, and that's where the last words are spoken by Naomi at the end of it. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. But that's not true, because the barley harvest has started, and she has Ruth, her daughter-in-law, with her. So that brings us to the end of chapter one.
So that's wonderful, because you said that she had lost everything, and she thought, so both women have, so Ruth has left everything behind. She could have returned.
Yes.
And Naomi.
To her mother's house.
Yes. And Naomi had the same choice. She could have stayed there, or she goes back, but she doesn't know what expects her there, because she has no husband and no sons. And so she is vulnerable. Both are vulnerable. Decide something that is quite risky, going to another country where they don't know how they were received.
Right.
And so what happens then during the barley season? Because you talked...
Yes.
You said
sign of hope.
A sign of hope.
Yes, the barley. And Ruth takes the initiative. They've got to get some food. So she decides to go and glean among the ears of grain that are left behind, and in the hope that in someone's sight I might find favour. I just love the language that she used. She happened to go to the field of Boaz, and Boaz just happened to be coming to that field and to ask, whose woman, young woman, is that? Very patriarchal question. But she's going to glean among the ears of grain behind someone in whose sight I may find favour. And then we have Boaz is a real true son of the covenant, because he's concerned for the foreign widow, and the Lord has asked that Israel remember when it was a stranger in a strange land, and to carry out the sacred duty of caring for widows, orphans, and foreigners. So this goes on. Boaz is very generous and caring for her, but comes the end of the barley harvest, and then the threat of famine and emptiness returns. So what's going to happen? Oh, what's that word return? Because it's used often. Shuv, return to God. That whole thing of conversion, change of heart. It's quite an interesting word. Then we come to the interesting third chapter, where Naomi comes up with a concern to get a husband for Ruth.
Yes.
And see, this is an audacious and daring plan. At the end of the barley harvest, Boaz sleeps after celebrating his harvest. He lies down at the end of the heap of grain. It's a place separate from other sleepers, a place of privacy and secrecy. Now, Naomi's suggested plot to go and lie down at his feet, or uncover the lower part of his body. It's not a Mills and Boone's romance, right? So, he feels the chill of the air at night, and he stirs, and he discovers this woman lying next to him. And he asks, who are you? Which is quite a change from whose woman is this? And what Ruth says, I think, she takes the initiative now, because Naomi said, he'll tell you what to do. But Ruth, she tells Boaz, spread your wings. An interesting word in Hebrew, kanap, wing, cloak, and private parts. Protect me by marrying me, as your maidservant. Spread your wings over me, for you are a redeemer, a goel, a next of kin. Very powerful theology there. And of course, Boaz, when he first saw Ruth, may the Lord reward you under whose wings you have taken protection.
Ah, so the wings come back again.
That's right. It's rather lovely. Reminds you of eagle's wings. You are a redeemer, a next of kin. Now, the other important thing that emerges only now, there's a problem. And the problem is that there's a nearer male relative who has right of redemption. And so Boaz says that he'll fix it all the matter up. And Ruth lies at the feet of Boaz, rising before daylight and departing, leaving their encounter in the secrecy of the darkness. Now, they are both called honorable people. I would say that Boaz knows there is someone who has a greater claim on Ruth. And he says that he sends her away with 6 meshes of barley. Again, there's an awful lot of barley that flows into their house to keep them going. And then when Naomi hears of what has happened, she says, the man will settle the matter today. And that will be the final chapter. We have 2 chapters on the barley field, in the barley field. And now the last chapter. The women disappear out of the last chapter for most of it, but they get back at the end.
And so how does it get then to that satisfactory conclusion?
Oh, well, it just so happens that at the city gate where decisions are made, 10 elders are brought together by Boaz, and it just so happened that the nearest relative happened to be going by and he gets hauled in. And what Boaz does is he says, look, Naomi has a field. Funny, we just find out she's got some possession of a field. And that field, of course, can be redeemed by the nearest relative. And he thinks, oh, good, I wanted this to be, it'll increase my holding. And then Boaz says, oh, and by the way, Ruth the Moabite, yes, she, Ruth the Moabite, she goes with the field. And no, he's not even named that relative because he doesn't deserve to be named. And then we have this wonderful ceremony of he gives a sandal over so you can walk on the field. That's possession ownership. And, of course, with the field goes Ruth, and now the matter is solved. The outcome is assured for Ruth and Boaz. There's that ain't the ceremony of the sandal, and there is an interesting aspect of that one, but we might go into this another time. So then finally, I love the language in the Hebrew scriptures. God remembered Ruth, and God remembers some of the other barren women of the Hebrew scriptures. When God remembers, she conceives a child, Ruth. And this blessing, well, the elders had blessed Boaz and said, may you bear children continuing, and the example given, Rachel and Leah, those great mothers from the book of Genesis, and Tamar, the fertility. The men focus on the restoration of a name for the dead, but the women, the mothers recognized and affirmed as being above the ideal number of sons. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, she bore him. She who means more to you than 7 sons. Wow. So that's high praise indeed. So, yes, Obed is a restorer of life to Naomi. It's almost as though Naomi is the mother. She looks after the child. Yes, so beautiful, really. And then finally we get P.S. Oh, by the way, David comes into the genealogy that's there, the search for roots. David is then the son Obed is the father of Jesse, and Jesse is the father of David. So we get a little mini genealogy to link it up. And it's interesting because when you really think of it, what goes before the book of Ruth, you have all the sort of national, then David coming at the end with Samuel Kings, international, national, international issues. And right smack there is this little book about a family and concerns and family relationships and so on. It's so different from what surrounds it. And you know that in the Hebrew Bible, Ruth occurs after that great chapter from Proverbs about the ideal wife woman. It's a wonderful chapter. And then, example, Ruth.
And last time you said, without the women, there was no Moses, and without Moses would be no story. So without the women, there wouldn't have been the child of Ruth. And without the child of Ruth, there would not have been David.
Well, life has got a fascinating way of linking things together. That's why I think that the theology of the book is so fascinating.
Well, certainly the women took the initiatives, and because without the women, the whole story would not have happened. And what would have happened to Boaz? And
yes, what is it that links all of those beautiful people in the story? That's the theology issue, I think.
That's
and
right.
It's the most important question for the reader. Where is God in the book? God acts only once, causing Ruth to conceive. We also hear that it's reported that God gave food for the people, and that's why Naomi returns. All other mention of God is in blessings. Yes. You know, the blessing that is spoken, and also in prayers.
Isn't
one another, and lament. Naomi's lament also, God is invoked there. But what happens is that the characters expect God to act, but the characters themselves fulfill these expectations by chance. It happened, all of that, but God is acting through all of that. And the storyteller is actually saying that God works through the courageous action of faithful people. That's the beauty of it. They show hesed, that loving kindness that permeates the book, loving kindness towards one another. God acts through the loving kindness that people express towards one another. I think that's such a beautiful message, the hesed of God. And of course, the way it develops, we sort of see it. And the best expression, I think, is in the book of Esther, where if you read the Hebrew version without those extra bits added in that you find in the Greek Bible, then God doesn't get mentioned in the book of Esther. And I think probably the additions were all added in to make sure that God could get into the story. But God, when God can sit back and say, good, you are doing what I want you to do. And that's why Ruth is such a beautiful book.
And isn't Naomi a little bit like a prophet? The way that once Ruth has committed herself to Naomi and to Naomi's people, she follows. And it's Naomi who takes all the decisions. It's even Naomi says, you don't have to say anything. He will talk to you.
Oh, but Ruth does do the talking. I think, yes, it is called the Book of Ruth, isn't it? But I think Naomi is kind of the beneficiary, and the people recognize that at the end, where they sort of, the child is almost Naomi's child. He's the restorer of happiness to her. Her life could have been so empty, and she would have been so helpless.
Yes, yes. And she has this wonderful daughter-in-law. So,
oh, yes. Yes, she loves you, and she is more to you than seven sons. The ideal.
Well, that's great. And what you mentioned, that there's hardly the mentioning of God about this prayer and blessing. That sounds a little bit like the Book of Esther, isn't it?
Yes, but those blessings are all in the additions to Esther. I always like to say, read the first edition of it without the extras, then read it again with the extras in. That's the best approach to Esther. But I love the continuity that flows through. And even when we get to Judith at the end, we'll find the blessings. They're a great combination, the three books.
Yes. And Naomi blessed the two daughters-in-law who were Moabites. So
yes,
the blessing is not just for the, even at that time, she didn't know that Ruth would stay with her, but she still said the blessing over those she loved.
Yes, yes, because you have been good. You have exercised hesed towards myself and towards my sons.
Yes.
Yes.
So we're looking forward to this session. So that is next Monday, the 4th of September. And that we'll have three more sessions in total. And all sessions stand alone, so you can join at any time. But thank you very much, Brother Karen. So we'll have this session on the 4th of September, 11th of September, and 18th of September, 7 o'clock to 8:30 p.m., and it's on Zoom. And for more information and also for all these video clips that we are doing, the radio programs, they are available on www.studyjoy.nz. And where are we going for the next parts, Brother Karen? So the 11th of September, we'll talk about Esther. What will come after that?
Judith. Yes. We'd say that cuts off the series.
Yes. Well, these are all strong women. And every time I can say, without these women, the stories couldn't have been told. And that's why they are named, and they are really important.
Shapers of history.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much, Brother Karen.
Good.
And all the best. And I'll hear and see you next week again. Or I'll see you on Monday for our session, 4th of September, 7 to 8:30 p.m. on Zoom. And please register so that you get the Zoom link. Thank you very much.
Good. God.
Out there, old pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world a new day dawning and shining. Can you hear the call of the prophets who see?